Welcome back, segment three of this week, and we are just starting to get moving on things. It's getting really exciting as the momentum builds now. We're going to talk about that third part of the plan, this individualized planning, and I really just want to kind of welcome you into this topic and think about it, because universal design means helping kind of en masse, right? It's helping so that everybody can participate more fully, building in those options, right? But this personalization happens through really getting to know individuals, and it's more responsive. So I'm actually just going to call it that, responsive design in worship. It means responding to individuals' needs, whereas maybe universal design is proactive in thinking you're going to put some things in place just expecting that people with varied abilities will be there. And responsive design is responding in particular to an individual or a family who is a part of your congregation or who wants to be, and you're going to put some things in place knowing what they need. So you're responding to the needs that they bring. So what does it look like to personalize some ministry opportunities and to plan on this? So let's talk about that now. So individualized planning, or we can call it responsive design in worship, because we're getting to know individuals. And it takes more time, it takes more intentionality than implementing universal design. And it seemingly benefits only a few people. So you might have those who are arguing that, you know, it's too cost prohibitive, it's simply too expensive, takes too much effort to do, and it's only going to benefit this one or two people, and we're just not willing to do that. Now, my theology is telling me that we serve the God who would leave the 99 to go after the one sheep. But I also want to just encourage that sometimes we put things in place to, yes, benefit one person because they are worth it, but also we could be unaware of what benefits this could have for a lot of others, and maybe we put some things in place that we think are responsive design, but turns out it actually helps a little bit of everybody and it becomes universal design. But I also just don't want to underestimate that we do this because it matters and it speaks to everyone when we put the intentional effort into doing what it takes for one person to fully participate because they are valuable to our community and they matter. That does speak to every one of us and is a huge part of how we build the culture of our communities. So, responsive design in worship. Now, a person might have a feeding tube so they can't eat with everyone else, no matter how many options you provide, right? A person might be an eloper or a runner. You need to put in place some protocols for safety for this person, or have some other people nearby who can catch that person when she's running away. Have somebody who is also a fast runner, can keep close, you know, can keep up with them. And this person who loves them so that you can redirect them and knows what it's going to take to redirect that individual. You might have all kinds of sound options, but this person is still going to wear their headphones to block out a lot of the noise because of the loudness of even the most common interaction can be bothersome to them. So you might need to rethink what's too loud just because this person finds it too loud and it doesn't seem to bother everybody else. So what works for this individual? You might need to rethink how a person is baptized while in their power wheelchair. You might just need to slow down and notice that this person is showing off his muscles to you. So what it looks like to do this responsive design planning is unique as the individuals and the families involved. That's the idea here, is that you're going to try some things. They might not all work the first time, and that's okay. And it takes communication, and it takes interaction, and it's a work together kind of process. So you get started by getting to know me, the individual, the person that this is going to be all about, right? So they're kind of the heart of this operation. Who is this person? And let's get to know them. Because this person, maybe their name is Grace, right? But this person fills a specific spot in God's kingdom. They're made for a purpose, made in God's image. They're a member of the body of Christ. They're uniquely gifted. They're important and indispensable. And they may also happen to have Down syndrome, or cerebral palsy, or a hearing difference, or whatever the difference might be, that is not the sole definer of who they are. This is a person, and you need to get to know a whole lot about this person, because they're a whole person. And you need to plan with the person. It's all about meeting this individual's needs so that they can worship with others, so they can learn best more about God and just the practices of following the Christian life, their needs for fellowship and socializing and interacting appropriately with other believers, and being a model for those who are not yet believers, and a plan for them to serve, right? So this person needs to be part of the planning of what works for them. What are their goals for learning and serving and social interaction and worship? Let's think about these things with the individual. And then also, as you plan with the person, think about others' needs to know about how this is going to impact the corporate worship, the learning alongside with, the relationships in these social interactions, and receiving from and serving with this person. So you need the plan for the individual, as my mentor used to say, but the other side of the page is the others who need to know this. So when you have a plan that's going to work great for the individual, and it includes maybe a flashing light or a noise, right, or a timer going off, well, that's helpful for them, but you might need to inform everyone else that that timer's going to go off and what it's for, so that they're not afraid that, you know, a fire alarm is going off in your church building or something. So it's about informing everyone appropriately. And if you're going to share anything about this individual with the rest of the congregation, you need their permission or their guardian's permission to do that. So be careful about sharing any kind of sensitive information, but using the plan and sharing it with those who need to know is extremely, extremely helpful. So here's a few examples from churches that I've worked with, as well as from, again, some other students in this course. So first of all, we have some churches who are planning for individuals about how to conduct the Eucharist, right, the Lord's Supper, doing communion with individuals who have limited fine motor stability, and even those who may have trouble swallowing. They're prepared with a plan to have someone hand the elements one at a time, ensuring that the individual ingests them at their own pace and of their own free will, but with assistance so that the elements don't get spilled. Or maybe it's by softening the wafer or the bread with the liquid and placing it as far back in the mouth as possible for that person to swallow without choking. Now, yes, this takes knowing the person well, but again, right, these are real examples from real churches who are doing these things so that a person can partake of the Lord's Supper in a way that works for their physical body, and having the patience and intentionality to do this with them at their pace. So another great one is churches who've learned to equip persons with epilepsy or seizure disorders with a seizure emergency backpack. And if they don't have one already that they keep with them all the time, the church keeps one right handy so that there's information and supplies, and it's all there in this backpack, which follows this individual wherever they go. In some cases, a person with medical training is always in the building when that person is there. I used to work with an individual who had a seizure disorder, and we always had to have either an EMT or a trained nurse or someone who was at least in the building so that this person had seizures, and we knew what the emergency protocols were, but then we could also call on that individual who had actual emergency medical training could help us through that episode. So these are just a few examples of some of those unique differences that people have planned for and been really intentional about, and it's worked really well. So a couple more examples of things is a student in the U.S. in this course says that animal buddies are great tools, and these are weighted stuffed animals. So you take the stuffing out of them and fill it with either some plastic beads, or I've known rice to be used to fill them instead, just to create a heavy object out of this stuffed animal. And so that individual could carry it with them. But the cost to get enough for everybody and the need to keep them clean and washed and sort of personal would make it better as an as-needed solution for individuals as opposed to something that you would provide for everybody. So that's why it's a great responsive design example. Students also commented, and this is from a student in Ghana, and this student notes that while these tools can be helpful for this one individual, they may not even be beneficial or necessary for others. So it may be best to reserve the use of these kinds of tools for the individual who specifically requires them. So you might have some tools like this, like a weighted stuffed animal in the room, and it really helps this one individual to participate well because it's meeting a need that they have. But if others picked it up, you know, it might be so heavy that someone would fall underneath it, for example. So so it's not something that you would just have out there and say, oh, this is for anybody to use at any time, because it could be detrimental to some. Well, it's very helpful to that specific individual for whom it is designed. So that's a great example. Personalizing the words. A student in the country of Georgia notes, for those who struggle with understanding figurative language, an interpreter could significantly enhance their comprehension and overall engagement in church service. And we're going to talk more about a lot of where these concepts come from and why these particular strategies are the ones being mentioned, but I just think what a great example from this student in the country of Georgia who is saying, yep, sometimes it's hard to understand what is being said in our worship services, and so having a kind of a personal dictionary or a personal interpreter to help us understand what those words mean is a great example of responsive design for an individual. A student in Kenya says Braille Bibles and hymn books and lesson manuals and church and other church materials have also been produced, allowing visually impaired members to connect more personally with gospel materials. People with vision impairment are often excluded from taking part in the church because the community wants to show God their quote-unquote best people, and impaired vision can still be seen as a curse. So you're seeing some cultural connections here to the understanding of disability and those attitudes in this. We'll talk more about that here pretty soon, but again, just this person from Kenya is noting that people with visual impairments, we do put those things in place specifically for them, right? Braille is not going to help everyone read, but it's going to help those with visual impairments to read. And so they say giving someone a Braille Bible helps them to be included in this fellowship of believers in their church. So some great examples to get you thinking about what does this look like, this idea of responsive design and how you can plan for individuals and their individual needs as it relates to engaging in the rest of the congregation. So that is our three-part plan, and we are going to move on next time to, like I hinted at, cultural context of attitudes. So have fun, enjoy looking through the resources and finishing up some of the readings, and again, those responses, keep that response assignment document or file going, and don't submit it till the very end of the course. I'm eager to hear your responses to these things, but we're going to do it one step at a time, 1 week at a time, and then I want you to submit that at the very end of the course. So hang in there, week 2. Let's move on to week 3 next. Get started when you're ready.